Springfield's Talk 104.1. I'm Nick Reed. It's Thursday, which means it's Author of the Week, sponsored by ABC Books on North Glenstone here in Springfield, just south of Kearney. Our author today, Joseph Sweeney, a veteran CIA lawyer who worked on high-level espionage investigations and prosecutions, general counsel for 25 years in support of a broad spectrum of intelligence operations all over the world. And his book is Dangerous Injustice, How Democrats Weaponized DOJ to Protect Biden and Persecute Trump. And one, thank you for joining us this morning. But two, you are this year the third person in your capacity to some degree that has written something of this like, kind of a warning about the weaponization of our system specifically against Trump. And, you know, the frequency with which we see these warnings coming out, on one hand, you know, it's a frightening example of how clear things have become. But, you know, it's just it's a sad state of affairs where we are today as people begin to, for good reason, doubt our institutions. And I know it's a broad question, but before we get into the specifics of your book, I mean, what happened? I mean, how is it that an institution like the CIA ends up where it is today?
Well, what I found in researching for my book was that the way we got to where we are, and I traced it all the way back to Trump's first campaign in 2016, is just how the Democratic Party just infused their members with hateful rhetoric. And these people became so brainwashed that those who were in positions of power in government, and I mean the career people, not just the political appointees, they all came to be of a mindset that the ends justified the means. And then they just perverted any authorities they had to assist their party in what was at the time a political assassination of Trump, and which is now, you know, manifested into actual assassination attempts of Trump. But that's what it comes down to. Just the entire political party has come to believe their own hateful rhetoric, and that it then justifies doing anything to get rid of Trump.
You know, it's very bothersome because it's not only in the institutions. I mean, it trickles down into our culture. And, you know, we've talked about this on the show that oftentimes you ask, or the media, they'll go around and they ask Trump supporters or people post why they like Trump or why they support Trump. And, you know, it's oftentimes, sometimes bumper stickerish, but positive, making the country great again because I love America, or it is about meaningful things like securing our border. But people that aren't supporting him, it's generally because he's evil. He's a dictator. His followers are dangers to democracy. And so that, it sounds to me like what you're saying is that is something that has also infiltrated the institutions, that perspective.
Yeah, and I dedicate an entire chapter of my book to that very point. Because what I found was, and this was, you know, in the lead up to Trump's first presidency, hopefully there will be a second. So this is going back to like 2015, 2016. The conversations I was having with my friends and family and neighbors, most of whom were Democrats. I live in D.C. D.C. voted 92% for Joe Biden. I'm the only conservative in my entire neighborhood. But what I found with these people is that they just became so enamored of the hateful rhetoric. And it was always just like you said, did you hear what Trump did? Did you hear what he said? And I would start questioning them. And it was clear that Trump hadn't actually said what they thought he said.
Right.
It was just the hateful propaganda outlets, and they were just eating it up, you know, eating it up and eating up. And they came to just feed off the hatred to a point that they needed it. And it was, you know, it's a very interesting psychosis.
I think to the average person, it's clear the different treatment between Democrats, Republicans, specifically Trump and Biden. But we did have the opportunity to see an apples and apples situation in a lot of ways. We're so used to saying, can you imagine if Biden, or, you know, if you imagine if Trump. But when it came to the classified document situation, you had this raid of former President Trump's home, Mar-a-Lago, And then all of the rhetoric and the seriousness of it, the weightiness of how dangerous it was what he did. And then, oopsie-daisies, we find out that Biden also is in this situation. So we were provided the opportunity to see the treatment of these two cases very similar in fashion. And I know that's that juxtapositioning is a focus in your book. Talk about that a bit, if you would.
Sure. It was the raid on Mar-a-Lago that started me researching and writing, because just a little bit about my background, I specialized in federal prosecutions that involved classified information. And so I did a lot of terrorism and espionage cases, you know, prosecuting actual spies. But I also worked on cases where high-level government officials got caught mishandling classified information and were at least investigated and maybe prosecuted. There's only four of those cases in our nation's history, and I worked on three of those four cases. And I go into great detail on these in my book, but I'll spare you that for now. But so I had a lot of background with these types of cases, and perhaps more background than any other person in the history of the United States. And so I started digging as soon as I saw the raid on Mar-a-Lago. And what I found when the FBI affidavit was finally put on the public record, and it was heavily redacted, but there was enough there for me to see what was going on. The FBI misrepresented the law. They twisted facts. I could not believe what I was reading. And I could not believe that the home of a former president could be raided on such a thin legal veneer. And this was not a minor raid. There were 30 armed FBI agents who were authorized to use deadly force. Now, as I was researching, and I just, with every stone I turned over, I found more and more malfeasance on the Biden administration, where they were obviously going after Trump to target him unlawfully by twisting laws and twisting facts. Then, as you mentioned, Biden got caught. And so I started digging into that case. And what I found was, with every rock I turned over, all the Biden administration, and I'm talking FBI, DOJ, the National Archives, they were all bending over backwards to cover up Biden's malfeasance, which the extent of which has not been discussed on the public record. He had, by my count, at least, and we don't know a total because it hasn't been given to us, but at least 135 classified documents in his house, in his downtown D.C. office, and they spanned five decades. This man was hoarding classified documents for 50 years. And yet, you look at the charging decisions, and they just make no sense. And anyone can see that, any reasonable person, but you would need my experience to be able to see the depth of the disparity. And that's what I lay out in my book, because they came up with every excuse they could not to prosecute Biden, who, by the way, in their investigation, they discovered an audio tape where Biden was talking to a ghostwriter, where Biden's coming up from his basement, and this is while he's a private citizen, by the way, February of 2017, and he says to the ghostwriter on tape, "I just found all the classified stuff downstairs." Right? That's a quote. Now, to get around that, normally a prosecutor would call that a taped confession, and it would be the star piece of evidence against a defendant. But in this case, the prosecutor said, Biden was probably too old and senile at the time to even remember that he had just found all the classified stuff downstairs, and he probably forgot immediately. That was February 2017, 3 years before Biden even became president. And to excuse that taped confession, they said it was just his memory. He was too old and too senile, which is just unbelievable.
Formerly of the CIA or author of the week, Joseph Sweeney, the book Dangerous Injustice, How Democrats Weaponized DOJ to Protect Biden and Persecute Trump. In the beginning, before Biden was caught, the narrative was about how dangerous it could be, that some foreign country, I mean, they made it sound like he had documents laying around the hotel and that any person could have possibly gotten a hold of this, and, oh, there was top secret information from Iran, and just the fact that he had it in an unsecured area was what was so dangerous. Well, then we learned Biden had these documents in his garage and all over the place, and then the real sin, we were told, was that Trump didn't cooperate. That was the sin. And the difference was Biden actually, he cooperated. He did it. In fact, it was him who almost turned himself in the way that they talked about it. What's your response to those claims?
Yeah, I go into this in great depth in my book, and it's one of my favorite parts. I call it the myth of cooperation, because Biden did not fully cooperate. When documents were originally found in his office in the Penn Biden Center, none of his people called DOJ or the FBI, not his personal attorneys, not the White House counsel's office, not even NARA. It was the NARA Inspector General, which is a separate independent entity that eventually, a couple days later, notified DOJ. Also, during the investigation, which, by the way, there was no legal compulsion, no subpoenas, no searches, they actually permitted Biden's private attorneys to search Biden's homes while there was an open FBI investigation. That's probably only happened one other time in history, and that was to Hillary Clinton's case, which I also worked on and which I talk about in depth in my book. But even when they finally did search Biden's house, the FBI, and this was after they let Biden's private attorneys rummage through the crime scenes, they found top secret documents in Biden's possession. Biden did not let the FBI take the documents. He did not grant consent. Instead, he sent a White House lawyer, Richard Sauber, up to his home in Delaware, and Sauber, the White House counsel's office, seized the documents from the FBI, and they kept them for days. So I could never think of another incident in American history where a White House lawyer inserted himself into the chain of custody for a piece of evidence. Biden also refused to answer questions from the special counsel. It's right in the report. It's buried in there. But Biden was permitted to refuse to answer relevant questions. That is not cooperation. And I give many other examples in my book of where Biden was not cooperating. And even when he did cooperate, it was with a process that did not follow typical investigative strategies and was designed by Biden's own administration to protect Biden.
I think we're talking with our author of the week, who's formerly of the CIA, Joseph Sweeney. His book, Dangerous Injustice, How Democrats Weaponized DOJ to Protect Biden and Persecute Trump. So many of us who actually pay attention to what's going on as best as we can, we see this lawfare, as it's called, these different cases in which even those who want Trump thrown in prison oftentimes can't explain what the charges are or, you know, the process of all this. But it's left a lot of people, including myself, feeling as if our judicial system is a crapshoot. Like you may get a fair trial or you may not. And what really concerns me is the recognition that you're always going to have a level of incompetence or corruption, but you're defined by how you deal with it once it's discovered. And I like to think once upon a time when exposure occurred at an injustice or due to an injustice, that we as a society demanded that that be corrected. But now they're just brazen, it seems to me. They don't care if people recognize. I mean, it's almost as if they are flouting the fact that, oh, yes, we know what we're doing here, but we can do it. Is there any hope, particularly with cases against Trump or any other high-profile political cases, that our judicial system can act in a fair manner any longer?
I think that is a very good question, and I wish I could give you a positive answer and say, yes, this could absolutely be fixed, but it's a difficult road to hoe. Our judicial system has become so politicized, to call it a crapshoot is generous. It's a crapshoot where the dice are loaded for certain throwers. Now, it may be that, you know, that's always going to be the case, right? Any justice system, it is implemented by human beings, and we are all to some extent or another flawed. And so a justice system will never be perfect. And powerful and wealthy people will always be able to take advantage of those imperfections. But we can say this, we certainly have to try harder, right? We certainly have to try harder, and we can do better. We will never achieve perfection, but we can absolutely try harder. I dedicate a whole chapter in my book to solutions, things where practical solutions that could be implemented and which I think would help eliminate political bias. We'll never completely get there, but there are a number of things that we could do and should do.
Do you think that if Trump does get reelected, he will be able to, quote, clean house in a way that can at least start to make a difference with this? Or is it so cancerous that no matter who he gets rid of and replaces, that it's just too embedded in order to make a meaningful change?
You know, the swamp is deep and the swamp is broad. And I give many examples of it throughout my book. But I do believe that if Trump is elected again, that there are a number of things he could do to at least help drain it and to shrink it. Will we ever eliminate it? Probably not. That's probably just too of a utopian ideal. But that doesn't mean that things couldn't be done. And again, I give her a number of examples in my book of things that could be done, and I think they would have impact. One of the most important ones is just to put political appointees in power who have strong moral codes and who are dedicated to transparency to the American public. You know, the exact opposite of people like we have in power now, like Alejandro Mayorkas. And so that one thing alone, just picking good people with strong moral codes and strong backbones and who are dedicated to transparency, that one thing alone would go a long way to eliminating bias, because they would not permit it. And where they saw it, they would stomp it out.
Our author of the week, Joseph Sweeney, formerly of the CIA, and again, the book Dangerous Injustice, How Democrats Weaponize DOJ to Protect Biden and Persecute Trump. And you can get this book along with all of our other Author of the Week books, of course, at ABC Books on North Glenstone. For Springfield's Talk 104.1, I'm Nick Reed.